You're selling directly to BlackRock. You're selling directly to Michael Saylor. And realistically, if you look at the billions of dollars being absorbed currently in the Bitcoin market, this is buy pressure and accumulation support that we've never seen before. If you look at an asset like Bitcoin, in 10 years to see a 10x as a genuine realistic probability is still the best asymmetric opportunity. And in spite of all of this selling that we've seen, and we'll jump in some charts and data to outline this a little bit better in a second, the fact that we're only down kind of 15 to 20%, and even if short-term things could be choppy and potentially even further to the downside, I think Bitcoin still has the potential, even though the institutions are here, even though we're seeing long-term holders selling, Bitcoin has still, on five separate occasions, defied expectations and done the extraordinary in a very short space of time. But if we do just see a small rotation from gold, which again, almost entirely institutionally driven price action, if we see a very small rotation of that into the Bitcoin price action, and we are to continue following this gold chart with about a 10 week to 3 months offset, then we could have a very explosive end to the year for Bitcoin.
What's up, guys? 70,000 of you guys keep coming back every single month, but 71% are not subscribed. So you're going to miss out on some of the great green candle content. So make sure that you're hitting that subscribe button with the bell notification so you get notified every time I drop a video. All right, now let's get back into this great interview. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, recurring guest, Matt Crosby of Bitcoin Magazine Pro. But Matt, I had to have you back on because it's over, man. We're sitting at what, like just over $100,000. We've crashed 20%. The whole world is burning and the Bitcoin bull run is over. So just pack it up, right?
I mean, it's the million-dollar question. Have we peaked? Is the four-year cycle over? Are we lengthening? And I'd love to say I have a crystal ball and know for certain what's going to happen next. But all we can do is look at the data, work on probabilities, and try and gain some insights into where the coming weeks and months may be going. So hopefully we can shed some light on that today and kind of clarify and simplify things. Because obviously everyone on social media is blasting that it's the end of the world, Bitcoin's over, big bear market is incoming. But if you just take a step back, zoom out, it can really clarify where we are. And I don't think it's quite all as doom and gloom as it really seems.
Okay, then dive into it, man. Why isn't it as doom and gloom as everyone sees? And why have we seen this recent pullback when we've seen essentially a lot of these treasury companies keep coming online? The United States isn't buying yet, but Eric Trump is saying that all these countries are starting to buy and secretly mine. And we've had the U.S. confiscate more Bitcoin, although they haven't bought more. But it seems like the big money is here and buying. So who's selling right now and why have we seen this recent drawback?
Yeah, 100%. It's one of these instances where I think Bitcoin might have crossed the threshold where it's almost suffering from success. I mean, all markets are supply and demand economics. It's simply who's buying and who's selling. And Bitcoin has now reached a point where it is liquid enough. We have these institutional buyers. We have these treasury companies pouring billions and billions of dollars into the market, which is now allowing an avenue for these holders that have been holding Bitcoin from a few hundred dollars for over a decade and have potentially millions or even billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. They now have that exit liquidity, whereas previously in any of the prior cycles, if they were to try and dump 100 Bitcoin, 1,000 Bitcoin, 10,000 Bitcoin, they'd have a very notable impact on the underlying price of Bitcoin. They'd have a huge slippage. And really, the costs incurred in trying to cash out at that point made it maybe not so worthwhile. Whereas now you're selling directly to BlackRock, you're selling directly to Michael Saylor. And in spite of all of this selling that we've seen, and we'll jump in some charts and data to outline this a little bit better in a second, in spite of all of this, the fact that we're only down kind of 15 to 20% actually underlines the current strength that we're seeing in the market. I know it all feels terrible and it's, you know, all good to say, oh yeah, it's actually a good thing that we're only down 20%. But realistically, if you look at the billions of dollars being absorbed currently in the Bitcoin market, this is buy pressure and accumulation support that we've never seen before. And even if short-term things could be choppy and potentially even further to the downside, I think medium to long-term, this distribution from huge OG whales to new market participants who are a lot more decentralized, diversified, is actually much healthier for Bitcoin.
Yeah, I actually heard Jordy Visser come in and talk about this, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's not exactly a Bitcoin maxi by any means, but what he says is this is kind of Bitcoin's quote-unquote IPO moment, where we have a lot of these Bitcoin whales come in, and they accumulated a lot of Bitcoin, but they had to deal with a lot of the risk, right? So at that time, they were going in, you know, going all in on Bitcoin at a very early time when Bitcoin was a dollar, maybe even less, maybe $100, $1,000, what have you. They've seen the massive amounts of return. They've had to ride those waves. And so now they want to kind of sift off into the sunset, whether that's diversification, just make sure that their portfolios are okay, or just hold it in cash and kind of just ride out. I think, you know, Bitcoiners have this kind of romanticizing idea or romanticize the idea that all these OG whales want to be in it and they want to be in it forever. And I think at the end of the day, when you get, you know, you wake up 10 years later and you have billions of dollars in your account, I think everybody's like, oh, you know what? I could take off a billion here or there, or a couple million here or there just to live a better lifestyle. So I think that's what I'm seeing and what we're kind of, observing here is like this IPO moment where the big money players who have the big money, who can afford to come in late, are starting to do that a little bit now. Granted, I still think we are very early, but I do think it's an interesting little dichotomy that we've got going on with the OGs starting to sell. So with that, right, where do you think we're going now that we're seeing all this buying pressure? Because you said you're encouraged that we're only seeing a 20% drawdown. So I'm curious where you think we're going the rest of this year, because we didn't have the Uptober that we normally have. We haven't hit Moonvember, dude. So is this just a delayed cycle, or is this end of the year not going to be as bullish just because we've had that group think?
Of course, and there's a lot of elements to that. The Jordi Visser article on Bitcoin's IPO moment is great. So anyone that hasn't read it, I definitely recommend doing that. The seasonality of Bitcoin, I know everyone looks to Q4 as being this hugely positive and bullish era of Bitcoin. And historically that has been the case. But again, we've kind of transitioned into this retail speculative asset, which maybe was more primarily driven by the Bitcoin halving event. Of course, the inflation rate decreasing by 50% had a huge impact on just the inflows of new Bitcoin into the market. Whereas now we've transitioned from this peer-to-peer currency with huge retail participation into this institutional asset where big funds are more likely to allocate a small percentage of their portfolios rather than saying, I want to get to one Bitcoin, I want to get to 10 Bitcoin. It's a much more gradual, granular, and linear kind of progression of accumulation and distribution rather than these huge cyclical waves we get in volatility for Bitcoin. So where are we going? As I said, I don't have a crystal ball, and it's easy to work in probabilities and look at the data to try and get some insights. But if we can just share some charts that I've got here, I think a lot of people, especially right now, are maybe a little bit nervous on where we may be going, just looking at the time elapsed from the start of the cycle. So what we can see in this chart is the Bitcoin growth since cycle lows. Now, what we can see, the previous two cycles, we've actually now surpassed the time of those two cycles since the bear market lows. So many people looking towards the traditional four-year cycle thesis of Bitcoin are seeing this and thinking, maybe we've topped. And I'm sure that is kind of playing some part in the selling as well. People see that we're about the same length as the previous cycles, and again, maybe start taking a little bit of profit. But ultimately, right now, even though things feel like it's all doom and gloom, really things are pretty minimal in the grand scheme of things. If we just zoom out and look at the volatility of Bitcoin, and again, this has been part of the evolution of the institutional influence in the market, we're very much seeing the big directional moves in Bitcoin becoming lessened and lessened. But really what we can see right now, even after this big flush out, we're still at the lowest levels of 6-month volatility we've ever seen for Bitcoin. So I still think even now, we're on the cusp of a larger directional move. And of course, I'd like to think that's to the upside, but we have to acknowledge that, of course, it could be to the downside as well. We could have already topped. But for me, just looking at the data, I think the base case is definitely still to the upside. But the number one reason that we have seen this recent kind of lull in price action is, as I said before, the supply and demand economics of Bitcoin. If we look at the amount of whales that have been taking profit on Bitcoin, this is a monumental amount of selling. So it's one of those where, of course, we try and find the positive in everything. But if we look to the previous instances of where there was this much Bitcoin selling from these OG whales, it almost coincided with a Bitcoin bull cycle peak. Now, in this cycle, we've been sustaining this level of sell side pressure for over a year, since November 2024, when the price was around $75,000, $80,000. And since then, we moved over 50% higher than that ish to $124,000. So this strength that we're seeing in Bitcoin is really unparalleled, unlike anything we've seen previously. And this chart here is, rather than just looking at the individual whale shadows of the 7 to 9 year, if we aggregate all of them, we can see that right now, Bitcoin is absorbing about 4,000 Bitcoin Bitcoin per day in sell-side pressure, practically higher than at any point during the previous bull cycle and much higher than most of the 2017 bull cycle. And it's been like this for multiple months. So do we have any indication that these whales are going to stop selling? Well, if we look at the number of whales actually taking profit, we can see it's not at exceptionally high levels. Usually at bull cycle peaks, we see not only a huge amount of whale shadows transacting, but we see a huge amount of individual unique whales selling on the market. Right now, we're seeing a lot of transactions from bigger market players, but this has kind of been gradualized over a longer period of time rather than a huge blow off top and a huge sell side event. And of course, if we look at the addresses holding 10,000 Bitcoin, as I said previously, this is actually a good thing for Bitcoin in the medium to long term. As we're getting rid of a small select few Bitcoin owners holding tens of thousands of Bitcoin, now it's not just a couple individuals that have the power to really move the market. If you're looking at 10 individuals with 10,000 Bitcoin selling at once, that has a huge impact on the supply and demand economics. Whereas now we're seeing, rather than a few individuals, we're seeing institutions, treasury companies, looking at the 100 BTC wallets, absolutely skyrocketing recently. Again, this just distributes the coins throughout many, many more participants. So I actually think this is good for Bitcoin. And ultimately, where does this lead us over the coming days and weeks? Well, there's a few different parts to that question. If we look at the ETF flows, this is a good source of Bitcoin inflows and outflows, capital flows into the market. We can see that everyone associates the ETF buyers as the smart money, these big institutional deep wallet players. But historically, they've actually been pretty terrible at timing the market. Again, looking at something like the funding rates or the fear and greed index, it doesn't matter how much capital you have at your disposal, you're still susceptible to the same market emotions and behavior as everyone else. And we can see anytime the 28-day average ETF flows has become outflows, this has actually coincided with a Bitcoin local bottom at pretty much every point since the ETFs launched in January 2024. And we're now closing in on that part. So I do think right now is a decent point to be potentially accumulating more BTC. I think the risk to reward right here is fairly strong. But like I said, we need to potentially acknowledge that the market could have already peaked and we could be now seeing some further downside. So I think if we break beneath that 50 week moving average to that 365 day moving average, that 1 year moving average, somewhere around $100,000. I think if we break beneath that, then things obviously don't look great. I'd personally be looking to the electrical production cost of Bitcoin, which is somewhere around $70,000 to mine one Bitcoin, but that cost is rising every single day. I think one of the positives of seeing lessened volatility is, even though we don't see as massive exponential moves to the upside, I do think the drawdown percentage we'd see in the next bear market is much, much lesser as well. But like I said, I'm bullish. I'm looking at many different aspects. I'm not just looking at on-chain data. I'm looking at macroeconomic policies. We could be at the end of quantitative tightening and potentially at the start of federal balance sheet expansion once again. And this would be the fourth instance we've seen throughout the history of Bitcoin. And all the three previous instances kickstarted an exponential rally in the Bitcoin price action. Now, obviously, we're later in this cycle, so I don't necessarily think we'd see the big 10x gains like we historically have done. But if we look to something like the short-term holder MVRV, so this is the average accumulation price of all new market participants, we can see that there's very typical points where once we've exceeded this cost basis for new entrants, once they've hit a certain amount of unrealized gains in the market, Bitcoin usually has a little bit of a mean reversion. So this is usually about 1.33, so when they're at a 33% gain, 1.45, about a 45%, and about 6.6, so again, about a 66% gain. So we can almost turn this short-term holder realized price into some price target bands. And if we can extrapolate their current trend going forward, then if we are to see a more positive end to 2025, then this would put us somewhere in the $160,000 to $200,000 region. Now, of course, these levels are changing every single day. But again, I think that's a fairly optimistic yet reasonable expectation of where Bitcoin can go this cycle. And I know a lot of people are going to say, but that's not happened. We've not seen these big parabolic moves this cycle. We've just had these choppy consolidationary periods. But really, we've already experienced five separate instances this cycle already of very rapid price ascension in the Bitcoin price. And these are rapid price ascensions of at least 65% within 100 days. So Bitcoin still has the potential, even though the institutions are here, even though we're seeing long-term holders selling, Bitcoin has still on five separate occasions defied expectations and done the extraordinary in a very short space of time. And we just looked at the final chart that I've got here, which is gold's price action overlaid to the Bitcoin price action.
What if I told you you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched. Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven.
Expectations and done the extraordinary in a very short space of time. And we just looked at the final chart that I've got here, which is gold's price action overlaid to the Bitcoin price action. Now, again, this might be wishful thinking to some extent, but if we do just see a small rotation from gold, which, again, almost entirely institutionally driven price action, if we see a very small rotation of that into the Bitcoin price action, and we had to continue following this gold chart with about a 10-week to 3 months offset, then we could have a very explosive end to the year for Bitcoin, with, again, just a small amount of this $10 trillion market cap increase that we've seen in gold over the past year or so flowing into Bitcoin, which is just a $2 trillion asset, then we could be, again, on the cusp of some very exponential price action in the hopefully not too distant future.
Now, with that, I have a little, I guess maybe some questions for you, because, you know, you're charting a lot of this, and I think we kind of went over this last time you came on the pod, but you're charting a lot of this and kind of describing it as traditional assets. And the unique thing about Bitcoin is that digital scarcity. So, you know, there's 2.14 million Bitcoin still left on exchanges as of right now. And based on 2025 on-chain data, there's 120,000 Bitcoin on known OTC desk or over-the-counter, which are the big players where they're buying from. So these big OTC desks are probably going to have to either go to the miners or have to go to, you know, some of these exchanges here pretty soon because of the amount of buying that we're seeing from these treasury companies. Now, I got to ask you, is there, you know, that parabolic potential supply shock going to happen, you know, maybe if buying keeps up or is just about the same in the next few quarters? Do you see that as a potential here, or do you think that that is farther down the line just because of, you know, these whales selling and, you know, potentially moving the weak hands or the Bitcoin from the weak hands to the strong hands?
I think the potential supply shock that everyone likes to look towards is probably a little bit further away than we'd maybe like to really admit. I think Bitcoin right now, unfortunately, is still very much a high beta, a higher volatility play on US equities. And recently we have seen a divergence with Bitcoin underperforming. But I think unless we see some continued favorable macroeconomic conditions, unless we see some more rallies in traditional markets and equities, then Bitcoin maybe isn't going to outperform to the extent that we'd maybe like it to. Now, I'm actually bullish on equities going into the last quarter and potentially Q1 of 2026. So I do think that we potentially have a lengthening Bitcoin cycle. But I think the arguments of Bitcoin supply shock due to Bitcoin left on exchanges, Bitcoin left on OTC desks, maybe isn't quite as important as the underlying buying and selling that we're seeing from long-term holders. If you can just share the chart that I've got up here, what we can see is the cumulative effect of the long-term holder selling. So if we just look at the previous two cycles, this is all of the Bitcoin that has been sold from long-term holders. So we can see in 2017, it was somewhere around 5.5 million Bitcoin cumulatively sold. In 2017, about 5.7. And in this cycle already, we've seen about 8 million Bitcoin being sold from long-term holders, which again, is a monumental amount of BTC. But really, I think as Bitcoin's narrative has shifted into this store of value asset as opposed to a peer-to-peer currency, we're seeing the habits of holders, again, begin to shift as well. So there are actually more and more Bitcoin being held by long-term holders. So if, instead of looking at the raw values, we look at the percentage of circulating supply held by long-term holders, we're actually right in this region of selling where we'd anticipate Bitcoin to maybe be at the latter stages of the cycle. So this is the percentage of Bitcoin sold by long-term holders when accounting for the percentage of the circulating supply being held by long-term holders, which may sound confusing, but we can see throughout every single cycle, it's actually been a very reliable point throughout the cycle where we've seen the amount of Bitcoin being sold by long-term holders where Bitcoin's starting to top out. So I'd like to say, you know, there's a shortage of Bitcoin on exchanges, there's a shortage of Bitcoin on OTC desks, but ultimately right now, even if we look to the ETFs and treasury companies, which have accumulated over 2.29 million Bitcoin, that's still only a fraction of the amount of Bitcoin that's actually been distributed by long-term holders. As much as the institutional influence is very much growing on Bitcoin, this is still a very much retail-driven market, and especially a market driven by the supply and demand economics of those who have bought Bitcoin and held for many, many years and are now reaping the rewards of sufficient liquidity to be able to take some profit on their positions.
Now, that's interesting. So is $8 million just $8 million worth, or is that like 8 million total coin? That's
8 million total coin. So if you go to this chart here, if you look at the previous Bitcoin cycles, it's been a very kind of, again, granular amount of long-term holder supply selling. So we looked at this 2017 cycle, for example. Here it started around 12 million, and as the Bitcoin price action peaked, it was about 8.7 million. So we saw multiple million Bitcoin being sold almost in a continuous phase of profit taking. Similar in 2021, now we did have that double peak cycle, which made it a little bit less granular. But in this cycle so far, we've seen something very unique, almost a triple peak cycle in terms of long-term holder distribution. So if you just look at this chart, you may think that maybe Bitcoin isn't seeing a huge amount of profit taking because the amount of Bitcoin held by long-term holders is still significantly higher than at any point during the previous Bitcoin cycles. But what we're doing when looking at these charts is actually cumulatively counting all of that long-term holder Bitcoin profit taking. So if you take into account all of the Bitcoin that was sold or distributed by long-term holders in this first run-up to above $74,000, in the first run-up to above $100,000, and over the past few months. Cumulatively, that's over 8 million individual Bitcoin. So this is a huge amount of selling. So again, it's one of those where, as analysts and as people bullish on Bitcoin's future, we always try and find the silver lining. But genuinely, from a purely unbiased, neutral analyst approach on the market, the fact that we've absorbed such a monumental amount of sell pressure throughout the past few months, well, years really, and Bitcoin has still been making new highs and is still only 15 to 20% off its current all-time high, really underpins the strength that we're seeing in the Bitcoin market. So it's one of those where obviously it's not great to see more and more people selling, but like you said, if you've been holding from a few dollars to over $100,000, maybe you deserve a nice new house and a shiny car, etc. But just zoom out. On the grand scheme of things, Bitcoin's recent dip is just that. It's just a dip. This isn't necessarily the beginning of a Bitcoin bear cycle. And if we are to start seeing this long-term holder supply, the distribution of these long-term holder coins begin slowing and some continued accumulation by ETFs and treasury companies and some more favorable macroeconomic conditions going into the latter stages of this year and into early next year, then again, I'm still thinking that the base case for Bitcoin is higher before we go lower.
Now I got to ask you, because we talked about the four-year cycle, you've been kind of just saying how this one's a little bit different. Is this one going to be extended into 26? And if so, do you have like a timeline prediction? I know you say you don't have a crystal ball, but just based on what you're seeing, give me an educated guess here. Where do you think the peaks of the cycle, or have we already hit it?
So I really dislike falling into the narrative of this time is different, because every single cycle, there's been the narrative of this time is different. So I'm just sharing a chart at the minute, which is outlining something that I think Bitcoin has clearly been following a little bit more closely this cycle, which is global liquidity. Now, coincidentally to the Bitcoin's halving event schedule, we can see looking at the global M2 money supply on a year-on-year basis, because typically we see this almost constantly increasing. But if we look at a year-on-year basis, we can actually see the acceleration or deceleration of that expansion and contraction. We can see that the periods where this has rapidly ascended has actually coincided with the Bitcoin halving events very nicely. We can see in 2020, around here, around March, April time, I think it was, that was just as this global M2 started rapidly accelerating to the upside. In the most recent cycle, again, we can see about April 20th of this cycle, when Bitcoin's price was around $70,000-ish. Following that, we had a huge expansion in global M2. Bitcoin rallied to above $120,000. And for a couple of months now, this has actually been decreasing. Well, the rate of expansion has slowed to the point where the year-on-year rate of change is actually declining. So this has coincided with the Bitcoin price action, again, stagnating and being in this period of chopping and consolidation. So I think traditionally this has moved as the Bitcoin halving event on a four-year cycle. But if we just look to the current state of macroeconomic environments, if we look to the debt cycle and the traditional business cycle, it looks like this could be extending into the potentially 5 or even 6 year cycle. So for dates, I don't know, I'm not a macroeconomic guy. It's not something that I really focus on, the expiration of huge amounts of debt within the US economy, for example. But I do think that it's much better to react than predict. And if we look at something like the comments made by Powell, if we look at something like the potential for the end of quantitative tightening, which is supposedly just around the corner, and the expansion of the federal balance sheet, then again, I think that this could be extended into Q1 of 2026, into Q2 of 2026, potentially. And I know that's kind of being contradicting what I said previously, in that don't say that this time is different, because of course that narrative has existed every single Bitcoin cycle. But it does look like this time might be different. And I do think that we are going to see something lengthening. I do think that we will see a big parabolic blow-off move to end the cycle at some point. I don't know whether that's going to be at the end of 2025, Q1 2026, or even later than that. But as I always like to say, it's much better to react than predict. Once we start seeing the futures market overly bullish, once we see a huge amount of positive funding rates, the fear and greed index incredibly high, once we see everyone start longing Bitcoin and a huge amount of capital inflows into the market, retail FOMO participation, these all kind of provide some confidence that the market is getting a little bit overheated. Now, if we have actually peaked in this cycle, if we are or about to enter a Bitcoin bear market, then it's probably the first time in history in any market where a vast majority of participants has been right. So just from a contrarian standpoint, I like to think that many people who are anticipating the four-year cycle to be the base case will be proven wrong. Many people are anticipating a cycle extending long far into 2026 and potentially beyond as a super cycle are probably also going to be proven wrong. It's probably just going to be somewhere right in the middle of that. The least anticipated outcome for Bitcoin is ultimately probably going to be the most probable.
Now, with that, is the having the effects of that, is that almost a mute point at this point, just because of how little Bitcoin is left to be mined? I mean, there's like 1.5 million coins just left in circulation. And last bull run, we had exchanges blow up. You saw FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, you name it. But the true power of Bitcoin is getting it off an exchange into cold storage. This bull run, I'm trusting Trezor, the company that's been around for over a decade, and they just had a brand new release of the best hardware wallet in the game, the Trezor Safe 7. It's got the first audible secure element. No other hardware wallet has this. On top of it, I travel a lot, so I need an easy way to connect my Bitcoin hardware wallet to my laptop, phone, what have you. Therefore, it is the easiest way and has the best connectivity to access your Bitcoin. This is truly how you become your own bank, and the best way to do that is with a Trezor Safe 7. So you could go to the affiliate link down below and get yourself one right now, and do it quickly because they are flying off the shelves, folks. So do it with the easiest and best way to get your Bitcoin off exchanges. So go to the affiliate link down below, get yourself a Trezor Safe 7, and get your Bitcoin off exchanges in the easiest way possible. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show. At almost a mute point at this point, just because of how little Bitcoin is left to be mined. I mean, there's like 1.5 million coins just left in circulation, and the changes, okay, they're going to be significant, but 450 Bitcoin is mined every single day right now as it stands. So what? I mean, you know, the less amount, is it just more based on the electricity cost, or is it more on, you know, the mining supply? Like, how do you view the overall halving as having an effect on price going forward? Or is it more of the macroeconomic factors?
I definitely think previously it was very much influenced by the Bitcoin halving event. But as you said, I think we're about 95-96% of all Bitcoin that will ever exist are already in circulation. This is just a negligible amount of Bitcoin, honestly. The amount of Bitcoin that's being accumulated by treasury companies in ETFs is significantly more than this. So I think much more than that is the existing supply of Bitcoin and the more large-scale macroeconomic factors. Now, I think long-term, it's going to be interesting for Bitcoin. We're talking in a few cycles time more than anything. But at some point, the block subsidy of Bitcoin is going to be very minimal. So for Bitcoin to really thrive for decades to come, we need to either see the fees in Bitcoin's price within the blocks start massively increasing, which, as we've kind of transitioned from a peer-to-peer currency to a store of value, it's looking unlikely that the revenue from fees is going to continue to exponentially increase. But if the block subsidy, again, continues to halve every 4 years, which we can map out, that's a certainty, then Bitcoin's price really has to double every 4 years for miners to maintain that level of profitability. So if at some point that starts to stagnate, then we may need to discuss further future incentives for miners, potentially reducing the block size is something that I've considered previously. Everyone talks about increasing the block size so we can get more transactions in, but I'd actually argue that maybe reducing the block size may be a better long-term solution to incentivizing Bitcoin miners to not only secure the network, but again, continue to allow transactions to go through at a fairly regular rate. But just on a more short-term basis, I do think that production cost, that electrical cost to mine Bitcoin, is still a very important level to watch, even though it increases to the upside and the downside, of course, with the difficulty changes. Ultimately, if you can buy Bitcoin for less than it costs to actually mine one, historically, that's been a pretty good area to accumulate Bitcoin. It's almost like buying treasury companies like Strategy at beneath a MNAV value of one. If you can buy one Bitcoin, $1 of Bitcoin for less than a dollar, then that's just good business. So I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic to watch going forward. And of course, this is something that extends into multiple decades time, not just over the current cycle, but the underlying bullishness or bearishness for the Bitcoin miners right now still shows that they are positive about the future price appreciation of Bitcoin. And historically, they've been a fairly good indicator of what's to come in the coming weeks and months.
Now, is there any weight to the narrative that, there's some potential paper Bitcoin out there with the amount of buying? Or is it just the data is just pointing that all these whales are just getting out at this point?
There's always been an argument of paper Bitcoin, and there's always been an argument of, now that the institutions are here, we're not seeing real underlying spot BTC. Maybe it's just centralized custodians like Coinbase, you know, internalizing their transactions on just a centralized database, which I'm sure is happening to some extent. But realistically, if you look to the previous cycles, FTX and Binance, do you really think every transaction happening on these exchanges were happening with real Bitcoin? If anything, now these big ETFs, these treasury companies, which are audited more heavily than any previously major crypto exchange, these are all buying spot BTC. And I'm sure that while there is some paper Bitcoin going around, and especially if you look to the CME markets and the options markets, the futures, etc., this is definitely taking some of the real underlying purchasing away from Bitcoin by just trading these derivatives. But people ignore the fact that throughout Bitcoin's entire history, people have been trading perpetual futures and futures contracts on Bitcoin on centralized exchanges where real Bitcoin probably wasn't being traded anyway. So of course, it's going to be a constant talking point. But if you look to the gold industry, people have talked about market manipulation and paper gold as a serious issue for decades. But no one's really been complaining over the past year or so as gold prices rallied exponentially to the upside. So manipulation and paper Bitcoin and all of these things are always argued when Bitcoin's price is going down. But realistically, we could also say that if these treasury companies and ETFs start outflowing and selling Bitcoin during an uptrend, then if that paper Bitcoin isn't really hitting the open market, then it could be in our favor. So it's not something that I pay too much attention to, the weight of paper Bitcoin. But again, it's always going to be that argument. It's just, when things are bearish, people like to bring it up a little bit more than when things are a little bit more bullish.
Yeah, exactly right. Everybody wants to try to give some reasoning behind why prices aren't accelerating and everything isn't exploding here. But you mentioned down to the downside, and how we're kind of seeing this floor. You mentioned also that there was a potential of still the exponential swings to the upside. Are you of the belief that the volatility is just going to keep going down?
Yeah, I mean, volatility is as cyclical as price action, really. We see these periods of expansion and contraction. And historically, when we've seen levels of contraction that we're currently in, it's not lasted too long before we see a much larger directional trending move in the Bitcoin price. But again, it's just natural for an asset to go from a few billion dollars to a few trillion dollars to not have these violent 1,000% gains in a short space of time or big 90% bear markets. It's just the natural progression of Bitcoin. Now, we're always going to see boom and bust cycles like we have in all markets for literally centuries now. A lot of people that say we're not going to have big blow off tops or big bubbles in the market. We're not going to see big bear cycles. It's just going to be a continuous grind to the upside. I would love to be the case, but realistically, when there's cheap debt available, people take on excess risk. And when the market conditions throughout global economies are a little bit more bearish, people tend to scale in on the more speculative and volatile assets, which of course cause bear markets. So I think that even right now, the volatility is very contracted. People tend to get lost in what's happening right now. And this cycle as a whole has definitely been a lot more boring, let's be honest, a lot more chopping and consolidating sideways price action. But as I said previously, we've already experienced five separate instances of the price rallying over 65% in under 100 days time, which from the current price action or around the current price action would take us to around $160,000-$170,000-ish in just about 3 months time. So at that point, I think people would again start to ignore the fact that we've been in a long period of consolidation. People would assume at that point that this rally is going to last forever. Bitcoin's going to rally to $250,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000+. But really, at that point in time, the market is probably a little bit exhausted. The period of expansion is going to lead to more contraction. And again, the bubble will burst at some point. And even if the bear market isn't as severe as we historically have seen, because there's a lot more institutional influence, and again, just the market cap in general has increased, and the amount of concentration of Bitcoin within large holders has massively distributed along amongst many, many more participants, we're still probably going to get a 40, 50, 60, maybe even 70% drawdown, which I know will feel terrible. You look at the sentiment now is 20% down from the all-time highs, and everyone's acting like it's bear market lows. Wait to see what the things are like in the middle of a Bitcoin bear cycle, which of course is inevitable. I'd love to be proven wrong on all this, by the way. I'd love to see Bitcoin enter this super cycle, decouple, never have a Bitcoin bear market. But again, just looking on the data, not just within the cryptocurrency markets, but all markets in general, on-chain data, everything we're looking at today is just mass psychology. And as much as markets may be evolving, everyone is still susceptible to fear and greed and just overexposing themselves and getting incredibly bearish. So looking at the data and acting as a contrarian historically has worked fairly well. So I'm going to bank on that working fairly well going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think once you get into this groupthink, this is what we get, right? I mean, everybody was saying, oh, it's October and Moonvember. Like, this is the time, right? We're going to see a massive shift in the upward direction here in this quarter. And we just, quite frankly, haven't seen it at all. And I think, you know, once you start to get in that groupthink, that's where we run into trouble here. But I do think that it's an interesting cycle. And I think that from what I'm hearing as well, it seems like a lot of people are kind of the opinion of you, like where it's, you know, it's a massive, it's a massive asset, $2.5 trillion to $2.5 trillion market cap, depending on the day, you know, whether we get these 20% drawdowns or not. And then, you know, everybody's saying, oh, it moves like the traditional asset. That's why we're not going to see the exponential moves to the top or the blow off the tops. And that's why I think that it's leading up to potentially being this blow off the top, maybe next year or the year after, because I do think that this cycle is going to be extended, and maybe we don't see as drastic to the downside, where it's instead of the 80%, it's 60 to 70, you know, still very bad, but, you know, for the traditional investor. But what do you say, like the psychology from what you've kind of seen from the newer players getting in? Because I think I've heard, you know, Checkmatey come on and say some things about this 95K level and how majority of wallets that have come in that are fairly new have this like 95K barrier. And, you know, a lot of people potentially could sell under that because they're looking at their new coins. And that is just a, you know, hey, I'm out of money, let me get out of it. Despite, you know, what everybody says, hey, buy at the bottom and sell at the top, nobody really actually does that. So do you take any weight to these new people coming in and potentially having those weak hands? One of my absolute favorite things about Bitcoin is meeting all of you in person. So mark your calendars for February 28th and come down to where I've called home for the past 8 years, Tampa, Florida. The Bitcoin Bay Foundation is putting on the Sound Money Soiree. It's the third annual. It's a night of Bitcoin, poker, an open bar, and a silent auction. All support will go to Bitcoin Bay, a nonprofit that is creating a circular economy down in Tampa Bay, Florida. They're doing absolutely great things, and it's the Bitcoin community that I've called home for such a long time, and these guys are absolutely crushing it. So please do anything you can to support. Buy your tickets today. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE to get 10% off your Sound Money Soiree tickets.
So do you know anything about Bitcoin?
No.
You guys can come down and see this ugly mug. Come boogie on the dance floor, shake it, and now that Bitcoin's over 100K, you can do it all with your girlfriends. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show. And sell at the top. Nobody really actually does that. So do you take any weight to these new people coming in and potentially having those weak hands?
I think the new market participants, these big institutional investors, probably have a much longer time frame horizon than what we've traditionally seen in Bitcoin. And the 95K level that you're referencing, which Checkmate has brought up, who's a great analyst in the space, someone I very much respect and look up to, is referring to the fact that over 50% of all capital inflows into Bitcoin came above $100,000. And around 95K, if we reach that level, around 60% of every dollar invested into the Bitcoin market would be underwater, which historically has acted as a pretty major indication of capitulation within the markets. Now, a rougher example of this, because I know he's done a lot of deep dive analysis on this, would be to just look at the realized price. Now, this is the average accumulation cost of all Bitcoin on the network. Now, the caveats with something like this is it's taking into account Bitcoin that was moved decades ago and bought it a fraction of a dollar, Satoshi's coins, for example. This is aggregating every single UTXO. Whereas if you look at the more active participants, if you look at the newer capital inflows into the market, then we can see that the realized price, the average accumulation price for a majority of new capital, is somewhere around that 95K level. Now, it's one of these. Historically, we can see buying Bitcoin when there's blood in the streets, when a huge amount of people have capitulated, when Bitcoin is beneath this realized price, has been a golden opportunity to accumulate Bitcoin. Now, it doesn't necessarily mark the exact bottom in price action, but again, it's just general market psychology, as you discussed. When a vast majority of people are incredibly bearish on an asset, when everyone's looking to sell, this is usually when the smart money, the sophisticated investors, can realize this and start accumulating some discounted BTC. So again, I think there's a very technical and psychological element to Bitcoin sustaining a drop to beneath $100,000. We can see recently we've been just bouncing above that. We have had a few wicks to the downside. But I think if we do maintain above that 100K level, then things still look fairly positive on a more zoomed out macro basis. But yeah, I think as soon as we start getting into beneath $95,000, once a majority of ETF accumulators are underwater, especially once we start getting to treasury companies and sailors' average accumulation price, which I think is around $75,000, that's going to really indicate peak capitulation within the market. And it's one of those where it'll feel terrible, but really those are the times where we really need to be actively looking to accumulate Bitcoin. It's just the kind of awkward range we're in now, where could we see another 20% to the downside from here and reach $70,000, $80,000 region? Yeah, of course. But ultimately, if we do see that, and it's only a 50% drawdown from the market peak that we set a few months ago, then ultimately that's still a much better situation to be in than at any point throughout Bitcoin's history previously. So I do think now the psychology of Bitcoin investors is we are going to see these reduced drawdown periods. We're not going to see these big 70, 80% massive bear markets where we want to see people offloading Bitcoin to try and avoid the worst of it. Realistically, if we're already 20% off the highs and there's only maybe 20% further down to go before we start getting into low territory, then again, maybe people are a little bit less willing to start selling their BTC. And again, like we could look at the long-term holder supply, still considerably higher than we've seen in previous cycles. If we look at something like the HODL waves data, which is looking at the percentage of Bitcoin held by different age bands, if we just take off all of the new market participants and look at, say, the 1 to 2 year plus, so anyone that's been holding Bitcoin for at least a year, even though it's been trending steadily to the downside, we're not seeing these big, massive moves, these exponential sell periods that we historically have seen. We're just seeing a much more gradual selling pressure. And the fact that when we look at the long-term holder supply, as I said, after these periods of long consolidation, these long periods of sideways price action, we actually see the long-term holder supply begin rapidly increase again, indicating that these people who are accumulating this Bitcoin sold by long-term holders on these big exponential moves up, weren't people buying just looking to make a quick buck. These are people buying and holding and transitioning into long-term holders. And we've seen this dynamic happen on multiple occasions already this cycle. So I do think, again, we discussed earlier the potential of a supply shock, discussing Bitcoin on exchanges and OTC desks, etc. I think this trend of long-term holder supply continuing to increase is, again, gonna continue into the coming years and especially into the next cycle. And at some point when the long-term holder supply of Bitcoin is 18 plus million, towards 20 million, a vast, vast majority, over 80% of all Bitcoin is held by people who see it as a long-term store of value, who aren't looking to distribute their coins for any price, then we are going to see a supply shock. We are going to see a small amount of capital inflows having this radical impact to the positive upside effect of the Bitcoin price action. So it's a very interesting point right now. Of course, we're talking more big picture things here. I think if we do break beneath that 95K level and I see a huge amount of people underwater, again, I'm bullish on Bitcoin. It's a silver lining on everything. It'll feel terrible, but ultimately it'll be a golden opportunity to accumulate some discounted BTC for the future. But as I said, my base case is still Bitcoin is going to make new highs before we enter a bear market.
Okay, so what's the bear market catalyst then? Is it just the natural cycle, or what is, you know, going to be the reasoning here? Do you think that we're gonna, I guess, potentially see the next drawdown where we're in a bear market? What are you going to be looking for, and what are some of the signs that you've seen in previous bear markets that kind of signal like, hey, this one's over?
This bull market has been a lot harder to gauge because, as we could see with many of the on-chain metrics, previously we would see cycle peaks really obviously identifiable by the fact that we see a huge amount of liquidity coming into the market and a huge amount of long-term holders selling their Bitcoin. Because if you are holding a huge amount of Bitcoin, you can actually start realistically taking a huge amount of profit until we saw this retail FOMO in. But now there's almost this constant buy pressure and buy support from these new deep wallet players coming into the market, willing to accumulate and rotate into Bitcoin seemingly at any price. So we've seen an almost constant amount of distribution from these long-term holders. So actually identifying when it's crossed into bear market territory has been a little bit trickier. But as I said, I think Bitcoin still has this incredibly strong correlation to specifically US equities and tech stocks. So even though we'd like to see Bitcoin decoupling and rely purely on the supply and demand economics of Bitcoin, if we are to see a more widespread global recession, if tariff talks don't have any kind of positive reaction, if we see more and more limitations coming in and more fear throughout traditional markets and economies, then Bitcoin is probably going to be the first thing offloaded by many of these institutional investors. Even though they're less willing to sell, it's not probably going to be like we've seen historically with retail going from, you know, one Bitcoin to selling 100% of it. It's probably just going to be a gradual scale out, 1-2% of their entire portfolio held in Bitcoin every day or so. Again, it's going to be a lot more granular and rotating into more safe haven assets. But ultimately, I still think Bitcoin is in a situation where the upside is more favorable. If we look to macroeconomic conditions, I think everyone needs to ask themselves, do you think that global governments are currently at a point in time where they're going to act a little bit more sensibly? They're not going to print their way out of problems. They're going to decrease overall debt and not expand their balance sheets. Is that going to be the case, or is it much more likely that we can kick the can further down the road one more time? We're going to see huge stimulus coming into the markets. I mean, recently I saw a headline that Trump was considering sending stimulus packages of $2,000 to everyone of lower incomes as a positive impact of the additional revenue from the tariffs. And if that happens, like we saw with the stimulus in the COVID 2020 situation, again, this just allows more capital, more money printing, and people want to not just invest in things, they want to protect their capital. We can see the purchasing power of fiat currencies like the US dollar has continued to decline. And I don't think fundamentals within these markets matter as much as they used to. People used to look to stocks and think, how can we fundamentally value this stock? How can we see what their price to earnings ratio is? I think in this day and age, people are just trying to protect the wealth that they already have. And it doesn't matter if we're seeing overvalued stocks. It doesn't matter if we're seeing commodities like gold rally to exceptionally new highs. It doesn't really matter if Bitcoin is at considerably new all-time highs. People still will rotate into these assets just as a means to protect their capital. So I'm very bullish on the upcoming weeks. I don't think that we're going to see some responsibility and sensible decision making throughout governments and central banks. And I think that even though we're definitely not early in the cycle, I still think there is still the potential and room to potentially extend into 2026, but definitely to still see this big blow off move as capital rotates into Bitcoin.
Now, have you looked at potentially pricing Bitcoin in gold comparatively to instead of pricing it in dollars? Because I just think the volatility of dollars doesn't really, I mean, it's harder to, you know, like you said, Trump or Powell could come out and say something or tweet something, and then that's honestly going to change everything. So have you looked at it at pricing as gold, and has that affected how you have, analyzed this cycle just because of how good gold is doing?
Yeah, so I just, if you can share screen here, one of the kind of less optimistic things is looking at BTC priced in gold. We can see that we're actually beneath the highs we set in 2021.
Why would you ever hold generational wealth on a piece of paper? It doesn't make sense. You need a foolproof solution, and I've got it for you. You could get this as low as $25, and if you use promo code GreenCandle, you could get 10% off. Being around for 12 years, they've engineered the perfect and most easy to use solution. I've partnered with CryptoSteel to offer for you guys just that. It is the cheapest and most secure way to store your seed phrase. I don't know about you guys, but I don't have too many things where I think one ton is going to fall on this, but it could survive all of that and more. So go to CryptoSteel.com. You can use promo code GreenCandle. You can get 10% off your entire order if you go there today. So go ahead and protect your generational wealth and do it with CryptoSteel. All right, enough from me. Back to the show.
Green here. One of the kind of less optimistic things is looking at BTC priced in gold. We can see that we're actually beneath the highs we set in 2021. And this isn't an ideal situation to see, but it's one of these, again, where people who have seen the massive price ascension in gold, over a $10 trillion increase in about a year and a half, Bitcoin's only a $2 trillion asset. We'd only need a very small percentage of that capital to rotate into Bitcoin to potentially reach these targets. So this conservative target of $150,000 would just be reaching the all-time high we had set in the last cycle. The moderate target of $164,000 would be reaching the highs we set in this cycle, and the $211,000 would be based on a Fibonacci extension level. But I think that the trend that we're seeing, not just in gold, but in other markets as well, if you look to stocks like Nvidia, is that institutional investors, those looking to rotate into markets, and like we said before, looking to rotate into fundamentally good bargain options, they're rotating into strength. Once we see gold start rallying exponentially, that train doesn't stop. We see more people rotating into gold, and it becomes this almost positive feedback loop where people see positive price action and allocate into that, which results in more positive price action. Now, of course, this results in speculative bubbles and isn't sustainable indefinitely. But if you just looked at Nvidia and gold, these have far extended beyond what would be considered normal and fair valuations for these assets. But it is because people are looking to what has strength, what is showing strength to the upside, and rotating into that. So I do think if Bitcoin, looking at its gold comparison chart, can break above these previous highs, people are going to see that. People are going to intuitively notice the strength throughout Bitcoin, start to observe its outperformance. And again, that's going to become a positive feedback loop where people start to rotate into Bitcoin as it's showing strength, then Bitcoin's price will see a positive reaction following that. And people are going to see that and start rotating more capital into that. So I do think looking at charts like this are very valuable. If we look at Bitcoin priced versus the S&P 500, for example, we're actually right on the previous all-time high retesting that. So if we can start to hold that, then again, I think that people start to observe the strength within Bitcoin and again, start more aggressively rotating into the market. But looking at a chart like this, I think maybe outlines why this cycle has felt less euphoric, a little bit more muted than previous cycles. Because historically, we saw Bitcoin outperforming absolutely everything. If you looked at the BTC gold chart, it looked incredibly similar to the Bitcoin just US dollar chart. Because once we started to see these big euphoric moves, it was happening versus all assets. But now that Bitcoin has become this multi-trillion dollar asset, now that we're not seeing as exponential gains to the upside and diminishing volatility, alongside reckless policy decisions resulting in pretty much all assets having these big exponential moves, regardless of fundamentals, then it does feel muted because Bitcoin's underlying purchasing power is actually similar to what it was about 5 years ago when priced versus gold. But again, I don't think that this is going to continue. And I think that Bitcoin just needs a catalyst. Once we start seeing the government shutdown ending, once we start seeing, again, more stimulus and quantitative tightening coming to an end, more federal rate cuts, all of these point towards more favorable macroeconomic conditions. And again, it's a little bit like an avalanche. Once the money starts flowing into Bitcoin and we see the price positively react, it just is a magnet for more money and more capital to flow into the market.
Now, that's really interesting here that you think that, that it's showing basically that it's at this, you know, I guess, even levels with the 21 peak in both the S&P and in gold. Now, I'm curious, what is it going to take for Bitcoin to somewhat decouple from that? Because the narrative is kind of like, oh, Bitcoin is this tech stock, and this is kind of where people flood their capital during, some sort of volatile times. It's because it's the most liquid asset in the planet. It's, a love-hate relationship with that, where, you know, when you start to see it crash, that's when people immediately pull out, or at least that's the narrative. So what is it going to take for Bitcoin to, I guess, decouple and become that safe haven asset that a lot of us in the Bitcoin space believe it is?
I think we're already kind of in the process of that. Like I said, at the minute, we're currently too correlated with US tech stocks and indexes like the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. And because we're more of a high beta play, when we see drawdowns in those indexes, Bitcoin is probably the first asset a lot of people holding in their portfolio will look to offload and rotate into safe haven assets. But I do think at some point, Bitcoin is going to be more understood and more seen as this inflationary hedge and asset kind of against, in spite of bad monetary policy. As to when that's going to come to fruition, I don't know. Of course, we're bullish on Bitcoin, so we'd like to see the decoupling event happening sooner rather than later. But ultimately, this is something that takes a lot of time. Bitcoin is still a relatively new asset. And if you ask the average person, they still don't fully understand what Bitcoin really is. In only a year and a half, well, almost 2 years since the ETF launch, we've already seen tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars rotate in from these institutional investors. They are starting to comprehend what Bitcoin is as an asset and are starting to adopt this Bitcoin standard. Now, it is a very slow process. These big institutions managing trillions of dollars are going to instantly put a few percentage of their capital into Bitcoin simply because Bitcoin still isn't big enough. Like we said previously, where now long-term holders are seeing sufficient liquidity to start distributing some Bitcoin to these institutional investors. At some point, we're going to see the Bitcoin market cap increase and liquidity to be sufficient enough that we can actually see these larger funds start rotating into Bitcoin. Because realistically, if BlackRock wanted to allocate 1% of their user holdings into Bitcoin, Bitcoin still isn't as big an asset as it needs to be to support such accumulation. They're not going to buy Bitcoin if knowing that their purchase is going to increase the price of Bitcoin by 50 or 100%. That's just bad accumulation. That's just bad business. What they're going to do is accumulate on every single dip, minimize that downside volatility. And again, it's one of these positive feedback loops where the bigger Bitcoin's asset cap grows, the bigger the market cap increases, the more liquidity it can handle, the more people are willing to just invest a small amount of their portfolio into the market. So it's very gradual. We're going to see small rotations of portfolios, just 1 or 2% here and there. And as Bitcoin grows from this positive feedback, it just allows more capital to flow in. And at that point, at the point of Bitcoin being sufficiently liquid and sufficiently large to support all of these capital inflows, which may be 5 years' time, might be 10 years' time, at that point, I could see a genuine decoupling event where Bitcoin isn't just a high beta play of equities. Bitcoin moves as an independent asset. And of course, like we said, it will still have these boom and bust cycles, but it's not going to be dependent purely on what's happening in tech stocks or the US equity stock market. It's going to be more dependent on the fundamentals of Bitcoin. It's going to be more dependent on the global liquidity and business cycle. And again, it's just going to be underpinned by the supply and demand economics of Bitcoin. And if we are beginning to see the startings of a squeeze in supply, if we are seeing less and less available liquid BTC available for these institutions to accumulate, then again, basic supply and demand economics, the price is going to be favorable in terms of its reaction to that.
Now, I got to ask you then, when do you think we get to $1 million Bitcoin?
Good question. I actually did an analysis on this very recently using some very dubious speculation and some very, let's say, I won't say reliable methods. I'm not a big fan of the power law or linear regression models or anything because they kind of repaint and historically change, so they always seem accurate. But to kind of gauge the general trend of something like the compounded annual growth rate of Bitcoin. I see that as a potentially semi-useful method. And again, pairing that with something like the production cost, which again is a fairly predictable trend of Bitcoin. We know every 4 years, the supply, the inflation rate is going to decrease by 50%. We can kind of model the efficiency of miners and the hash rate based on that, following a semi-rough linear regression channel. So I think somewhere around 2032, that 2030 to 2035 period, we could reach $1 million. But that's in $1 million in today's money. If we actually look at the liquidity injections, the fiat debasement, $1 million in 10 years' time is not going to be $1 million in today's money. In terms of $1 million of purchasing power in today's money, then again, we're probably looking slightly later, 2035 to 2040. But again, if you look at an asset like Bitcoin, in 10 years to see a 10x as a genuine realistic probability is still the best asymmetric opportunity that exists across pretty much any market. Unless you get into very speculative quantum and AI stocks, Bitcoin has stood the test of time for well over a decade. Clearly, Bitcoin is here to stay. Clearly, it's being adopted by not just institutions and treasury companies, but nation states as well. And considering the fact it is still just a $2 trillion asset, less than a tenth of gold's market cap, the opportunity here is still absolutely monumental, and I don't think it's going to be too long before people start really realizing this. And even though 10 years might seem like a long time away, to enter seven-figure territory for an asset that'll be just about two decades old at that time is a monumental achievement.
Now, do you take any account of Bitcoin or like these financialized products, I guess, that Saylor is trying to build right now with like trying to tap into the fixed income and the global bond market as potentially coming in? Because the narrative previously was just all about Bitcoin is digital gold, it's going to take the gold market over. But these $145 trillion global bond market, the $300 trillion global bond market, the $145 trillion fixed income market. And then, you know, you got the real estate market where people are looking at, oh, we can use Bitcoin as collateral for mortgages and all these different markets that Bitcoin's starting to take over. Is this just part of the general, Bitcoinization of finance? Or is this something that you think that is going to accelerate Bitcoin adoption?
Listen, I think a lot of my analysis is too rational. The thing that really drives these huge cataclysmic events, not just in finance, but in innovation, technology, and human history, is the long tail events, these things that no one could really foresee coming. And I think Saylor expanding into the fixed income markets with products like Stretch, which I think is incredibly interesting, and a lot of these other derivatives, which again, are just allowing Bitcoin to be more than just a speculative store value asset, but can become more of this financial system. I think, again, maybe we're underestimating the impact of these long term. If suddenly global transactions, global debts, international trade can be conducted and will be conducted on Bitcoin, then all bets are off. Who knows how high we could go in a very short space of time. And I think what Saylor is doing in just increasing the awareness and increasing the availability and options to these institutional markets, to the existing fixed income bond markets, etc., is again maybe not great for MSTR shareholders because it's maybe diluting their shares and maybe lessening the positive impact of holding MSTR directly. But for Bitcoin as a whole, I think it's incredibly positive. And trying to analyze an irrational asset like Bitcoin in a very rational way over a long, long term is potentially short-sighted. And if these products really do start accelerating the adoption of Bitcoin, really do start increasing the usability and functionality of Bitcoin as a settlement layer for huge multi-billion, multi-trillion dollar settlements, then again, Bitcoin can really start fulfilling its potential and exceeding price expectations a lot sooner than maybe many are anticipating.
Well, yeah, Saylor's an absolute G for doing all of this in Bitcoin. I mean, it's absolutely incredible how many markets he's starting to tap into. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. But Matt, you've been very generous with your time. Why don't you tell people where they can find out more about you and see what you got going on?
Well, if you go to bitcoinmagazinepro.com, you'll gain access to all of our charts, analytics, data, trading view indicators, API access, all that good stuff. You can follow me on Twitter and YouTube at Bitcoin Magazine Pro. You just search anything like that, then you'll get it there. My personal is Matt Crosby Pro, but don't feel like you have to follow me there. All the good stuff's on Bitcoin Magazine anyway. And yeah, Brandon, as always, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to catching up in person in just a few hours' time here at Bitcoin Amsterdam, where we're both presenting. So should be a good conference and a lot of fun.
Yeah, man, for sure. We're gonna share some of the local brewskis out here and enjoy it. So I'm looking forward to seeing you. And yeah, thanks for coming on.
Anytime.
Thank you guys all for tuning in to another great episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you found some value in this one, please hit that subscribe button and that like button to help send this one to the masses. And I've got a surprise for you guys. I've got two more episodes that you have the chance to watch here. So go ahead and click one of them, and I'll see you guys all at the next one.